Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. So let's reset here, shall we? Where is this economy as we turn the page? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today, the 19th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. It is going to be a busy day tomorrow for soon-to-be President Biden and his administration. Executive orders to issue on the virus and vaccines, immigration, and this economy. Work, of course, to do on the $1.9 trillion relief package he is going to send to Congress. So, as I said, we thought it might be a good idea to step back and assess for just a minute exactly where this economy is as power changes hands while the recovery sputters and the virus remains in control. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that story.
Joe Biden has kind of been here before. 12 years ago, he and President Obama took over in the midst of the Great Recession.
If anything, this is even worse.
University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee chaired the Obama White House Council of Economic Advisors.
We're in a catastrophic health and economic crisis. We're still as bad, by some measures, as the lowest point of the Great Recession.
We're still down 10 million jobs, more than 5% of all jobs before the pandemic. And as the virus surged and lockdowns returned this winter, consumer confidence and retail sales fell. The economy started losing jobs again. But the worst is likely now behind us, says Douglas Holtz Aiken, who was the chief economist on George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors.
There remains a tremendous amount of underlying strength in the U.S. economy. If we can sustain those who have been out of work with the relief that we've seen Congress pass and deal with the virus, there's a good platform to jump off from.
Including lots of pent-up consumer demand and accumulated wealth in the hands of higher-income Americans. But Brad McMillan at Commonwealth Financial Network warns that low-income households and business owners could suffer a lot more in the 6 to 9 months that it'll take for vaccination to induce a post-COVID recovery.
If people lose their apartments, their homes, that cripples them and their ability to recover. We've seen tremendous tragic damage to small businesses. The longer this goes on and the less people spend, the more of them are going to shut down and not come back.
And that will only make the recovery harder and longer. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
So Mitchell talked about jobs there in the middle of that piece. We are going to do some jobs through the program today, unemployment being, as it is, one of the identifying features of this recession. The national unemployment rate was 6.7% in December, down from a pandemic high of nearly 15% in April, if you remember that. Still, though, it's close to double where we were before this thing. So, joblessness varies widely by gender and race. We've talked about that a lot. Also by state, which is where we are going to spend some time today. Unemployment as proxy for how uneven this recovery is. Hawaii is where we go first. An economy based mostly in tourism, of course. One of the highest unemployment rates in the country right now, 10.1%. Again, 6.7% nationally. We got Manu Powers on the phone. She runs a business with her husband in Kona called SeaQuest Hawaii. It does boat tours for snorkeling and seeing manta rays and that sort of thing. Manu, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
This is the standard first question when I talk to a small business owner. How is business?
Business is poor. Business is dramatically decreased, let's put it that way. And I would go so far as to say that's an understatement. And we are operating currently this week at about 5%. And that is definitely not enough to sustain us. It's been a painful year, to say the very least.
Yeah, I'm sure. This question of being able to sustain you, you have been going through this pandemic now, as the rest of us have, for 10 months. You were, as I understand it, closed for a number of months entirely. How much longer can you keep going?
I would say thanks to, you know, some of the government funding that was made available to us, and we were quick to act on that. We could probably sustain until the fall at this rate. And I think that that's much better than most have fared through this. When we purchased Sequest in 2015, the company had 8 employees. And when we shut down in March of 2020, we had 44 employees and business was doing 600% what it had been when we first started. So our business model was based on that growth.
Yeah.
So when business was completely shut down, the model was thrown out the window and it became survival mode. When you've got a town that is entirely dependent upon tourism one way or another, you're looking at a very difficult time for the residents, and hopefully we survive this.
The 35-ish or so people that you've had to lay off or let go, what are they doing now? Do you know?
A lot of them have moved away.
Yeah.
Some of them are hanging in there, you know, living off unemployment, hoping for another stimulus package like we just got, so there'd be an extension of their benefits. But it's tough. Even my husband, he's even taken a side job to kind of support us through this, because of course we had just purchased a home and a mortgage that was equivalent to what our income was at that time. And so now we have to sustain that. You know, we hope to walk out of this with our home and our assets in place. In other words, our boats, the building the boats are in, et cetera. Whether we're able to do that, we'll see.
Yeah. On the topic of you and your husband taking on other jobs, tell me about your reservations person and what it meant to you to be able to hire one. And then I'm going to guess now you don't need that person anymore.
Right. So you're speaking to the reservations person at this time, whereas right before the pandemic, we had full coverage. And that was a real milestone for us psychologically, emotionally. And so now we're glued to the business again. And that can be really stressful. We have 3 young children. We're high school sweethearts. So I think that we're going to make it. Check back in 6 months. But we have had stress placed on us that we could have never imagined. And so we're trying to stay positive. You know, and that's how we see this. This is an opportunity for us to get back into the business, dig deep, really figure out some new strategies, and then next to diversify. If we've learned anything, it's that diversification is critical. And hopefully, should we ever face something like this again, there will be multiple revenue avenues for us to fall back on.
Well, look, best of luck to you. Manu Power, she and her husband own Sequest Hawaii out there in Kona. Manu, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
It was my pleasure, Kai. Thanks for having me.
Florida and then Nebraska are going to round out our state unemployment survey a little bit later in the program. Traders on Wall Street, in the meanwhile, we're choosing to see the silver linings in this economy today. Shocking, I know. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Also busy today getting ready for the incoming administration were various and sundry Senate committees holding confirmation hearings for some of President-elect Biden's nominees, among them Janet Yellen, the pick for Treasury Secretary. As you might expect, a lot of talk from the Senate Finance Committee about how much the government ought to be spending to repair this economy, and a lot of answers from Yellen like this one.
To avoid doing what we need to do now to address the pandemic and the economic damage that it's causing would likely leave us in a worse place fiscally and with respect to our debt situation than taking the steps that are necessary and doing that through deficit finance.
Deficit finance, debt, and how much of a big deal it ought be right now is our story today. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has it.
The thinking of Janet Yellen and many other economists goes like this. We need to borrow and spend whatever it takes to get the economy back on its feet now. Former Fed economist Claudia Sahm says, think of the economy like a house with a leaky roof. If you don't fix it now, you'll have a big, expensive mess to clean up later when it rains.
And that all costs so much more than if you just fixed the roof in the very beginning when you saw that we had a problem.
Sahm says if the government doesn't pour enough money into, say, keeping businesses going so they don't have to lay off employees, the economy won't fully recover. Besides, says Doug Elmendorf, dean of the Harvard Kennedy School and former director of the Congressional Budget Office, if you invest in the economy now, you can help it not just recover, you can make it stronger.
If we use government borrowing to build infrastructure, conduct research, then the debt will leave our children and grandchildren better off because of the value of those investments.
At today's hearing, Janet Yellen said, we do need to be responsible about the growing federal debt. But David Beckworth, senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, says investing now means the debt will be less of a burden.
So the more people are working, the more taxable income there is, the more revenue the federal government gets, and the easier it is to pay off the debt going forward.
Beckworth says the national debt could even double without causing big problems that would trip up the economy right now. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Our tour of the unemployment economy lands in Florida now, a state whose unemployment rate has been pretty close to the national average the past couple of months at 6.4%, which sounds okay until you know joblessness in Florida was under 3% a year ago. And that jump in unemployment and poverty that goes with it means a lot of people are having a hard time making ends meet. So we got Dr. Ted Greer on the phone. He's the CEO of Hope South Florida, which helps Broward County's homeless population. Dr. Greer, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
This is a very big question with which to start this interview, but I'm going to give it a try anyway. What has the past, 10 months in this economy been like for you and your organization?
Well, it's certainly been challenging. We actually thought we didn't quite sure what our future would hold because we had to cancel, as most organizations, all fundraising events, which mean a loss of income of about $1.1 million. So we weren't quite sure where our future would hold, but we pivoted like everybody else. One of the things that became critical was meals. And so while we were providing, prior to the pandemic, about 200 meals a night, that quickly jumped to 400 or 500 meals per night. So that was the immediate shift that we have to make. That became a priority versus housing.
What does that look like when your demand for people looking for meals to eat more than doubles?
Well, I tell you what, it made the neighborhood nervous because our location became a hub for meals, not only for the homeless, which that's our core business, but neighbors. We normally would have a sit-down meal prior to the pandemic. And for safety reason, to follow all CDC protocols, we established a grab-and-go concept. So what happened was you have 300 to 500 people standing in line waiting to grab a meal. That number just tripled because of the poverty area, of course. So you had homeless people, you had neighbors, you had families, children, all in line side by side asking for a hot meal.
Agencies like yours don't just do food, right? There is housing. I'm sure there's some kind of employment assistance. There's probably personal hygiene, showers, and clothing, right? I mean, you're running the gamut here.
All of the above, yes. Yeah. So our core housing. So we've housed over 215 households since March. We provided 80,000 hot meals. One of the local municipalities asked us to take the lead in spending the federal dollars they receive to help mitigate evictions, because they weren't quite sure how to manage that, since that's what we do as a core of our business. And then the employment assistance, as you indicated, when COVID hit, most of our families who we put in housing have to show income. Well, we had 30% of our clients lost income because they lost their jobs. So that became a crisis for us as well. So we had to reach out and find how can we get folks gainfully employed once again. All of those became priority for us. So the meals, the housing, the employment, keeping people from being evicted was just critical for us.
Yeah. And look, by everything you're saying, you're going to keep on being successful. But I guess my last question to you is, how much longer can you keep doing this? Because there is some light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine and yes, fingers crossed. But it's been a tough 10 months. Do you have another 6 or 8 months in you?
We're going to keep going. We have to. This is our mandate. This is our calling. I'm hoping the vaccine would sort of help mitigate the crisis that we're seeing. We're concerned about an influx of evictions if the eviction moratorium is lifted by the feds. So we're hoping that the new administration coming in would, you know, extend that so that we can get some legs under us to keep people safe and keep them in housing.
Dr. Ted Greer Jr., he's the CEO of Hope South Florida. Dr. Greer, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up,
we just need kind of an uptick in cattle prices, and I think everybody might be a little bit happy.
Yeah, that'd do it, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 116 points today, 0.3%, ended at 30,930. The NASDAQ gained 198 points, that's 1.5%, finished at 13,197. The S&P 500 up 0.3%, 37.98. General Motors up 9.7% today. The automaker announced Microsoft is investing in its autonomous vehicle project, which is known as Cruise. Microsoft, in turn, would be the preferred cloud provider for GM. Everything is in the cloud now, right? Microsoft firmed up 1.7% today. Peloton, the bike company, dipped 4.8% today after a downgrade. Workout clothing firm Lululemon slipped 0.6%. As politicians continue to argue over relief, a new survey from Bankrate.com says more than half of Americans say a payment of $600 or more would only last them between 1 month and less than 3 months. They also say, by the way, 42% of people, that the money would be going to pay their bills. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Look, payday's awesome, but running payroll, calculating taxes and deductions, staying compliant, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is a simple online payroll and benefits tool built for small businesses like yours. Gusto gets your team paid while automatically filing your payroll taxes. Plus, you can offer benefits like 401k, health insurance, and workers' comp. Just for listening today, you also get 3 months free. Go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Mergers and acquisitions news comes to us today from the energy sector, specifically the transition from dirtier to cleaner energy sector. The French oil giant Total is going to pay $2.5 billion for 20% of the world's biggest solar developer. That's Adani Green Energy, an Indian firm. As Marketplace's Andy Euler reports, this is just the latest example of big oil trying to diversify and stay relevant and profitable as electric vehicles and renewables gain in market share.
Across the board, international energy companies like Royal Dutch Shell and BP are increasing spending on renewable energy. Total is just the latest. Doug Vine at the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions says big oil is responding to a host of pressures.
As concerns about climate change accelerate, and as countries signal their commitments to fully decarbonizing their economies, the future of oil has never been more uncertain.
Which he says has led oil companies to begin the process of reinventing their business models. Total has invested in a mix of renewables, and Robert Kleinberg at Columbia University says in going bigger on solar, Total is hedging its bets.
You know, if you think of new energy as a roulette game, they're betting on red and black and even and odd and all three columns.
And make no mistake, Total and other industry leaders are not giving up on oil just yet. Kleinberg says big oil companies are not particularly concerned with what kind of energy they're selling. They just want to remain profitable. But they can also see the energy transformation around the corner. And energy industry consultant Sarah Vakshery says this particular partnership with Adani Green Energy makes a lot of sense for Total. After all, India is one of the world's fastest growing markets for energy demand.
If you're an international energy company and you are looking to be ahead of your peers in a game to seize a huge chunk of market share, India is where you want to be.
She says the other place multinational energy companies are looking to invest, Southern Africa. That's because, like India, that region is moving fast toward increasing electricity access to more citizens. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Tomorrow morning, really early, everything you need to know to start your business day. David Brancaccio and the gang on the Marketplace Morning Report. Check it out. We end our state tour of this economic recovery in Nebraska, where the unemployment rate is 3.1%, less than half of the national average. We got Patrick Gerhardt on the phone to talk about his local economy. He is the president of the Bank of Newman Grove, Nebraska. It's a town of about 700 people. Mr. Gerhardt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kai. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I'm well. It's good to have you on. Let me start the way I always do when I speak with small business people in this economy. How is business these past couple of months?
Business in our area, which is rural northeastern Nebraska, to be honest, has actually been fairly well due to the farm economy. Uptick in grain prices, the government helped last year, has really kind of stabilized a lot of uncertainty that was going on in 2020 in this area. We just need kind of an uptick in cattle prices, and I think everybody might be a little bit happy. So, I mean, as a whole, we're doing okay.
That, which is good news to hear, because you don't hear a lot of that in this economy lately. I wonder, how do you suppose Newman Grove and the surrounding area has been able to do that? Is it just the fact that you're ag-based and ag is doing well?
Part of it is ag-based, of course, but, you know, that can kind of come and go.
Yeah.
Another thing is that we are far enough away from major metropolitan areas where, you know, when the shutdowns and the downturns happened at the beginning of COVID, we of course complied, but we were not nearly as hit as, you know, some of those major areas. One of the benefits of being kind of a rural economy, it's almost kind of trickle down in a way. Like when we get hit, we're almost kind of prepared for it, if that makes sense.
Right. No, it totally does. Did you have, in March and April when the first CARES Act came, did you have farmers and clients and customers coming to you asking for PPP loans? Did you wind up doing a lot of that work?
Yes, right away. We didn't do a whole lot. We mainly stuck to our customers and went with the people that we know, and we know their credit history. We know their background. We kind of kept it internal. We didn't go out seeking PPP loans like some institutions did. That's kind of where our comfort level was.
Yeah. All right. This, I should know the answer to this having done research, but I don't. Where physically in Newman Grove are you? Are you like smack in the middle of town, as it were?
Yeah, no, our bank's just right on Main Street. It's about four blocks long. And yeah, we're on kind of the eastern end or western end of it. So,
all right. So when you go out the front door of the bank and look right and left, what does it look like? Are there small businesses open and thriving? Are things closed? What's the deal?
You know, surprisingly, we haven't lost anybody. In fact, we've actually had a little boutique pop up in the middle of this whole thing. She was planning on doing it from the get-go before COVID happened, and she's open, and I think she's done fairly well. So, I mean, we haven't lost anybody. Everybody, I think, is doing okay. In fact, I think a couple of our businesses have actually seen a little bit of a boom in regards to it, just based on the fact that people aren't leaving Newman Grove to go get things as much as they once were before COVID. They're buying more, at least it seems like, in our area. And, you know, everybody's doing okay for the most part.
Well, it's good to hear. Mr. Gerhardt, thanks very much for your time. Sir Patrick Gerhardt, he's the president of the Bank of Newman Grove. They are in Newman Grove, Nebraska. Thanks for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
This final note on the way out, a big change in the testing industry. The College Board announced today, College Board does the SAT, among many other standardized tests. It said it's getting rid of the optional essay on the SAT and individual subject tests as well. It happens immediately for students in the United States. It'll be phased in for international students who want to go to school here. Should say a lot of schools have already made standardized tests optional or gotten rid of them entirely. There is a huge racial and wealth disparity thing happening here. All right, we are going, but here is your Tuesday moment of economic context. Sorry to end on a downer, but the theme of the program today kind of has been where this economy is right now, right? A new study from the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College shows 51% of American households were at risk last year of not being able to maintain their standard of living in retirement. 51%, more than half of us. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Ben Hethcote, and Janet Wintz. Tarn Yeves is the executive director of On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.